Welcome to the Lucha Lounge Podcast. I am your host, Elijah Kang, a sound designer by day, but by night, I am a pro wrestling connoisseur, the proud owner of two cats, and the host of this, the Lucha Lounge Podcast. This podcast is all about giving uncommon people a platform to share their ideas and stories with all of you. So thanks for listening. Here we go. The guest on the 26th episode of the Lucha Lounge Podcast is an award-winning singer-songwriter. We talk about his musical history, collaborating with other songwriters, and his unique way of coming up with very visual lyrics. He also gives deep insight into the lyrical content of all the songs he performs live in studio. On a personal note, this artist's music really resonated with me, and I can't wait to share it with you all. So without any further delay, please welcome my guest, Mike P. Ryan. Boom, and we're live with Mike P. Ryan, singer-songwriter. Welcome to the Lucha Lounge Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is a unique one for me because whereas most of my guests that are musicians or singer-songwriters are younger and they are starting their careers or maybe in the genesis of their careers as singer-songwriters, you have been doing this for a long time and you are well established in the world of singing and songwriting. Yeah, well, I guess this is going to be a unique discussion in that matter.
Well, I've been a musician my whole life, and I started the songwriting thing, the singer-songwriter, playing in this genre maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. So as a young man, as we talked about a little bit before, like most young men, you know, I played the guitar, and there's only one reason that young men play the guitar, and that's to meet young women, right?
So, absolutely.
but I found out I sort of had an affinity for it, and I'm self-taught. And back then, which I'll probably say a lot since I'm an old guy, the way that you learned songs was you had to listen to the record. There was no YouTube, there was no internet, so you had to try to figure songs out by listening to records. And so that's how I developed the ability to play by ear, which nowadays is...
it's a lost art.
Folks still do it, but You don't see it as much as you used to. And I still don't read music. I know a lot of music theory, but I don't. I'm not a classically trained musician. So, played in bands for years as a lead guitar player. Never ever really considered myself a singer. And grew up out west in Oklahoma, and played in a lot of rock bands. And then at the time, sort of drifted into what they used to call country rock. Now they call it alt country, which was kind of rock but kind of country as well. And was in a band through my college years that was pretty good, that had kind of a regional following and opened for some big names and stuff like that. So had a fair amount of exposure to live gigging on not a national scale, but up to the sort of the regional scale. And then I ended up going into the Army after I got out of school. And so I spent a number of years in the Army and put music aside while I was a soldier, other than just messing around occasionally with a guitar. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I got to a place where I was able to buy myself a very nice acoustic guitar, and I started drifting more into the singer-songwriter type music, listening to that. And the way that I got into the type of music that I enjoyed and that I tried to emulate as a songwriter, it's kind of interesting. Grew up listening to rock and really was a big kind of what they used to call progressive rock fan.
King Crimson.
Yes, and King Crimson and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and all that kind of stuff like that. So I never was really big into acoustic music. I had friends that were into Dylan and Crosby, Stills and Nash, and I liked it. It was cool. I like harmony and stuff like that, but it was never really my thing. But late middle age, I discovered this music that was coming out of all the Texas songwriters, guys like Robert Earl Keen and Steve Earle and James McMurtry. And the reason I think I was drawn to it was because I'd been away from that part of the country for so long, serving in the Army, and that was home for me. And these guys were singing about stuff that directly and indirectly that touched me, because it's like, hey, those are the references I understand. That's why does this music grab me so much? It's because all the little references that they make and their sensibilities and stuff are really it makes me homesick. And so I started listening more to that type of acoustic type music from those guys, you know, and there's a whole genre. Not a lot of folks in this part of the country are super well-versed in it, but there's a whole school of guys that came out of Texas and still are. That's how I drifted into this particular genre. Was I got this nice acoustic guitar and I started emulating these guys that I had been listening to that I really enjoyed. So that's how I ended up kind of being a songwriter. And then I missed performing because I cut my teeth playing in bands. Yeah, and
the bar scene.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when I started writing songs, I thought, well, why not give this a shot as a solo acoustic player? And I started doing that around town, and you know, the rest is kind of history. I mean, it just like everything else, in every endeavor there's a dues paying phase. So I had to do all the unpleasant the cover gigs and
coffee houses, winery, all of that stuff, right?
You're just background music for people that are eating and drinking, and you know, that's cool. But it was really different as a performer, because the thing that struck me initially was, as a solo acoustic act, there's nowhere to run. You know, there's nowhere to hide if you make a mistake. And I was used to being part of a band, so you could blow a chord change, you could forget a lyric, whatever. Man, when you're by yourself, it was like
that's just as vulnerable as you can be.
It's just dead silence when you screw something up. But you know, like any performing or public speaking or whatever, you get better by doing it.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
You learn to roll with those changes and stuff. And so that's how I got into doing what I do. And one of the things that became apparent fairly quickly was that I had the ability. I've always been a good writer, but I'm too lazy to write fiction is what I tell people. It's why I write songs. It's because I can write these little 3-4 minute novella vignettes, you know. Writing a novel or writing any type of fiction, which is what I think is interesting to write, it's an onerous process. I mean, it takes forever to do something like that, and you really, really got to be disciplined and all that. But writing songs, you can tell a story, which is what songs really are, and what folk music really is telling stories. You can tell a story in 3 or 4, sometimes 5 minutes. And so a lot of my music is, and especially on my first album, but there's some stuff on here, it all, I won't say it all, but a lot of it is what people would call story songs. And so the challenge for me, which I think is fun, is telling that story, developing characters, which is what you have to do in a movie or a novel, but you have to do it in a song right away. You got to set the scene, you got to develop the characters, you got to have the arc, you got to have maybe the resolution at the end of it.
Right.
And so I found that I had the ability to do that, and that draws people in. And so my songs, people enjoyed my songs, especially, you know, kind of the story songs, especially at first. And so
it is interesting that you mention, like, that you compare your songwriting to a movie or a TV show or something like that. And one of the most important things about those formats of media is the beginning. Right. How do you hook an audience immediately?
Right.
And as I was, I hate to use the term, but as I was stalking you, you know, on social media to get a feel for the type of artist that you are, one of the things that really stood out to me was the initial lines of all of your songs immediately grab you in a way where it's like, it's so pleasing to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And the songwriting is so, I don't exactly know how to articulate it, but yeah, it just grabs you.
Yeah. Well, what I try to do to that, to your point is, filmmakers normally have, you know, the first thing in any movie is what they call an establishing shot.
Yeah.
And so it will be a shot of, you know, if it's a Western, it'll be the town or the ranch or, you know, the mountains or whatever. So I always try, especially if there's a story to be told in the song, to have that first line be an establishing shot, if you will. And what I try to do with that establishing shot is to, and one of the hallmarks, I think, of my songwriting that I really try to work hard on is little details. And so sometimes when I'm trying to write about something, I may pull a picture of it up. and just look
like
at
an actual image.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
And so I may say, what is it that I see in that picture that I want to try to describe? And I talk about that when I teach songwriting seminars as well, is look at pictures.
Mm.
You know, if you're looking at a picture, or if you're going to write a song about, you know, I've got a song called Fade au Dos, which is the first song on the new record, which is about a Cajun girl that's trapped in an abusive relationship. And she lives in the bayous of Louisiana. And so I pulled up pictures of Louisiana bayous when I was working on that song. And I said, what do the houses look like? And so the first line of that song is an old shotgun cabin sits on concrete blocks where the cypress trees are thick with Spanish moss. So, you know, you see those. So it paints a picture in your mind, you know. And the next line is the black bayou water shines in the bright Cajun moon. So what you're doing is you're painting a picture with words. And sometimes to paint that picture, you need to actually look at what it is you're trying to describe.
Right.
You know, if you're going to write about a sunset, you know, I've got a song that I've been working on for a while that talks about a guy whose wife is dying, and he sits next to her bed and he watches the sunset out their bedroom window. And so it describes, you know, the sky is a canvas of purple and red, you know. So that's what you have to do, I think, to really tell those stories, is you have to think about, how am I going to describe this? How would I describe this to someone who hasn't seen it? Is sometimes the way I talk to songwriters about it. If I've never seen a thunderstorm out on the plains, how would I describe that to somebody? I have a song that talks about, it takes place in Texas, and it talks about long fingers of dark water against the pastel sky. So, you know, that's what those thunderstorms look like out on the open plains. It's these long, dark fingers of water. So, you know, that's how you get to your point, that's how you get to those lines that hook people, because you've worked on those small details.
I think your approach to it is exactly what your type of songwriting needs.
Right.
Because acoustic singer-songwriting, for the most part, you know, musically, I mean, it, you know, the album sounds great and everything. I'm not trying to knock the musicality of it, but people are coming to hear these words. They're here to, you know, they're listening for the story, not so much for, you know, the virtuosic, you know, like,
right,
you know, guitar playing, like in a rock band, you're here to see, you know,
yeah,
Slash
some
play
guy
a solo.
Shred, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The way that singer-songwriters shred is with their lyricism.
Yeah, that's
and,
interesting.
Man, the way that you just described that, and even describing the first couple lines of, you know, just a handful of your songs, it's like, it makes me want to listen to it, because
yeah,
I want to know what happens next. It's...
Well, you know, two things come to mind as you mentioned that. One is that I never write a love song, because I just feel like the whole boy meets girl thing has been done to death, right? And God bless people that do, and there are people that can do it and break your heart with it. But by and large, you know, most songs are about love, and there's a reason for that. I mean, it's the most compelling emotion and all that, but I just don't find love songs interesting to write personally, you know, your standard love song. So if you look at that record in particular, there's a couple of songs that are sort of love songs, but it's just kind of not my jam, as the kids say. So what I try to do is focus on relationships, but the sort of other aspects of relationships that are interesting to me. And to me, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was thinking about it on the way down here for whatever reason. I'm working on some new stuff. And as humans, we're always drawn together, no matter what we say, no matter how much we think we're a loner. You know, we're still, there's something in our DNA that draws us together. And that's why, you know, music is often about love, because it's the one thing that everybody understands, is that need for that connection. But there are other aspects of that connection, I think, that are interesting to explore as well. So that's what I try to do. So maybe that's why the songs seem a little bit more interesting.
So, you're so right about that.
Yeah.
Everybody has a love song, but yeah, it's been done to death. And then I forget who said this, but a philosopher said, nobody wants to hear about a good relationship.
Right. Yeah. There's a great quote that I teach a lot of songwriting seminars and workshops and stuff. So I've got all this stuff sort of preloaded in my head.
That's great.
But there's a great line from, I believe it's Robert Frost, who said, no tears in the writer, no tears in the reader. So if you don't, if you're not talking about something that's compelling to you, it's not going to grab somebody else. And if it, if you're just, you're just making up songs about love because you think that's what songs are supposed to be about, then it'll just be, it'll come off as uninteresting in the, for the most part, you know.
Yeah.
So really talented songwriter said one time that as a songwriter, what you want to do is you want to make the person feel the way that you felt when you wrote that song. And what right. that does is that reminds people that we're not alone. And that's what's compelling about this type of music oftentimes is it, it, it touches your emotions because you're like, eh, yeah, I've felt that way before.
Right.
You know? So that's to your earlier point, you know, rock and roll is, just to pick a genre or hip hop, you know, I get it. I get why it's, why it, it has the draw that it does, you know, as especially for young people, you know, yeah. as a young man, there's just something about that, you know, AC/DC that,
yeah.
you know, it's just the raw power yeah. And
that
you know,
testosterone.
Yeah, exactly.
You,
yeah. yeah. And so, you know, there is a place for that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's a time and a place for that. And then there's kind of a, you know, you have your other time and a place for stuff like I do. So,
man, that is such a unique way of looking at it. Like yeah. The way that you approach songwriting is so intentional, like with the photos and the, I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Well, too, what I try to do is, and it leads to a different discussion, which is the business aspect of it, which, you know, you have to decide what makes you different because mm-hmm. there's 8 gazillion guys and gals out there with guitars. There's people with wonderful voices. There are yeah. people that can play, you know, multiple instruments. So what makes you different? And that's as to sell yourself, you know, which is what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You have to hone in on what makes you different, what makes you interesting. Otherwise, as a fan, as a listener, why do I care? And sometimes yeah. I ask myself that about the song I'm writing. Why would anybody care about this song? And so that's a little bit of a diversion into the performing business aspect of it. But What I try to do, my hook, if you will, and what I think is interesting is, and it's in my bio, and it's my little tagline, is I try to write songs about the emotions and the experiences of everyday people. And by that I mean lots of folk singers delve into politics, and that's great, you know, and that's always been part of folk music, is sort of that protest angle and everything. But to me, what's interesting is, back to what I mentioned a few minutes ago, is the is just the everyday interaction between people. And especially to me, I grew up in kind of a blue-collar family and around what I would describe, and I don't mean it pejoratively, I mean in a respectful, loving way, around working people, you know, hardworking men and women that that did jobs that, that have to be done.
Right.
You know, and right. so to me, I want to tell stories of those kind of people, you know, and they're everyday, just everyday folks and things that, that they experience. And so to me, what I try to do is I try to keep it to the human interaction versus really grandiose themes, you know, and there's plenty of people that do that. They do it great. It's not my thing. So,
yeah.
you know,
that's... And yeah, I mean, it is really important to know where your audience is,
right?
What you excel at. A lot of people who are approaching singer, you know, approaching the whole music thing, you know, there's no focus.
Right.
You know, they're just trying to spread themselves way too thin. And I find that with a lot of people that are starting out, they're just wide across genres,
right.
wide across topics and stuff like that. So and that's great, too. You know, I'm not knocking that at all. But it is almost very refreshing to see such a focused songwriter in yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, people seem to respond to it. And some of the stuff I wrote initially that was in that vein, I could tell that people responded to it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you got to go with your strengths, I guess.
Yeah, man. Play to your strengths, not to your weaknesses. Exactly. So, yeah, let's hear a song.
All right. Well, let me, I'll start with one that's one of my favorites. This is, one of the few, I guess, sort of love songs. What I thought was interesting about what was the impetus for this song was I thought it was interesting, or I was thinking about it for whatever reason, how when we fall in love, there's a point in time when we're actually not in love, but somewhere, somehow, we cross over this imaginary, invisible line, you know, to being in love. And there had to be a moment in time when that happened, when that moment hit where you said, yeah, you know what? You know, I think I do. I think I am in love. I think I do love her. I do love him. And so that was the kind of the thought behind this song. So I thought, well, how would that happen? And so I imagined a guy and, you know, I was, like I said, I was trying to kind of put regular working guys into it. So I imagined this sort of a simple working guy who maybe works in a factory or something. And he's introduced to this woman who, and I joke when I play live and people always laugh, but there is some truth to it. I don't understand it. And I always say anytime you can put a girl's name into a song, it always works. And so... doesn't work for guys' names, but it seems to work for girls' names. So I've got four or five girls' name songs. So I came up with the name Sally Ann. I don't know where I came up with it. But so I imagined this guy at a party or whatever being introduced to this woman named Sally Ann and somebody saying, hey, this is Sally Ann. And so that's the hook for the song. But it's the idea of falling in love with somebody that you just, you know, sort of love at first sight, never met her. But it's called This Is Sally Ann.
Well, secondhand coat, an old worn out shoe. Factory whistle plays you those working man's blues. Well, now you pound out the hours that make a working day. Thinking about her smile helps take your mind away. And everything's been better since you heard somebody say, this is Sally Ann. Well, this is Sally Ann. She's gliding through the door like a lonely soldier's dream. This is Sally Ann, she's glimmering like gold from a cold Alaska stream. When she takes your hand and she whispers in your ear, it's like a gentle summer breeze. You look in her eyes and realize nothing that you would not do to please. Oh, to please Sally. Now silent and strong, that's how you used to roll. Then she came along and she opened up a window to your soul. Well, now your heart got a running start, now it's flying like a bird. And her voice is the sweetest sound that you've ever heard. And everything's been better since somebody said the words, this is Sally Ann. This is Sally Ann, she's gliding through the door like a lonely soldier's dream. This is Sally Ann, she's glimmering like gold from a cold Alaska stream. And when she takes your hand and she whispers in your ear, it's like a gentle summer breeze. You look in her eyes and realize nothing that you would not do to please. Please, Sally Ann. Please, Sally Ann. And a bedside candle cast two shadows on the wall. And through an open window, you can hear the night birds call. And you lay awake and wonder what you did to deserve all of this. Must be something in a past life that made you worthy of a kiss. A kiss from Sally Ann, she's gliding through the door like a lonely soldier's dream. This is Sally Ann, she's glimmering like gold from a cold Alaska stream. when she takes your hand and she whispers in your ear, it's like a gentle summer breeze. You look in her eyes and realize nothing that you would not do to please. Oh, to please Sally.
That is a great song.
Thank you.
And you know what? Like, I say that a lot. I say that almost after every yeah, person sure, that's coming
yeah,
out.
Yeah. That's a great
song. A great song. And I'm not lying.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not lying. It's not facetious. But, man, your writing is just so surgical.
Yeah.
Like, every word is so intentional. And, like, even from the opening lines with the secondhand coat and the boots and the factory whistle, like, I was, like, right there in that bar.
Oh, see, there you go.
Man.
See, and I proved my point of what happens when you're a solo singer-songwriter, because I forgot a lyric there for a second. I had to think about it, and I blew one chord change.
So. That's okay.
It's all good. Yeah, it's all but it's, like, it's live music.
It is. Not only that, I can hear the patina on the song. Mm-hmm. Like, you've played this a million times. Yeah.
I have. Yeah, and, you know... As a guitar player, as I'm sure you know, as a performer, when you're not, I'm not particularly nervous today, but anytime you're with somebody new and doing something like this on tape, you're always a little bit nervous. And the most difficult thing to do are those fine motor skills. So, you know, those finger-picking things.
Style,
you know, if you could just bang on it with a flat pick, it's easy. But so it's funny how that they always say, you know, you should start with something where you're flat picking. And, work up to the finger picking.
Yeah. No, man, it sounded great. It's such a pleasure to listen to a song like that. It is. It's really a great one. I gotta ask, because, like, as I was listening to the song, kind of crossed my mind. Is any part of your music autobiographical?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a little bit in all of it. Sure, absolutely. Yeah. And that song in particular. It's funny you say that, because I envisioned my wife when I wrote it, just because, you know, she's a beautiful woman. And I don't remember, I guess it was about 6 or 8 months ago, because that song's been around for a little while. And I forget how we got on the subject, but I said to her, you know that you're Sally Ann, right? And she said, no, I did not know that. So yeah, sure, there's a little bit of, some of it's very autobiographical, mm-hmm. And some of it is not. But there's a little piece of it in everything, and I always tell her there's a little piece of her in every song that has to do with a relationship. So yeah, you can't help but infuse a little bit of your own personal experience.
Or else songs will be printed out on a computer somewhere.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean?
Yeah. And so I've got a couple that, you know, are very, very personal, that one that I'll play for you maybe in a couple minutes, you know, about my mom who passed away in 2005. Mm-hmm. I've got one that's kind of an interesting song that I was messing around with last night. I kind of forgot about it. So, I grew up in sort of a chaotic household. I'm Irish on both sides, and so unfortunately there's a lot of alcoholism in my family, and so... This is not completely autobiographical, but it is... there is some elements of my own experience in it. And one of the things that... not to get too heavy or deep, but one of the things that... my brother and I used to do when we were little, when there would be, you know, family turmoil, is he would take me and he would sneak me out the window and we would go outside and hide until it was over. So this song is called Charlie. Wake up, Charlie, they're at it again, and it sounds like a bad one this time. Dad came home, 3 sheets to the wind, and Mom, she's breaking stuff and crying. We'll slip out the window and down the back stairs, and I'll find us a safe place to hide. Take my hand, Charlie, try not to be scared. Put your coat on, it's cold outside.
Well, it seems like it's happening more and more since the old man got laid off again. Angry voices behind the bedroom door, and you and me out in the dark, praying it will end. And we slip out the window and down the back stairs, and we'll find a safe place to hide. Take my hand, Charlie, try not to be scared. Put your coat on, it's cold outside. And with eyes closed tight, I dream I can fly, and I soar high above everything. No fears and no tears, just clear blue sky, and you're with me, Charlie. You're safe beneath my wing. You're safe beneath my wing. Sounds like it's over, they've turned out the lights. Everything's quiet for now. You're asleep on my shoulder, so I'll carry you inside, and I'll try to find a way to get us out of this somehow. 'Cause I swear, Charlie, I can't take another night waiting for the world to cave in. I'm tired of hiding, I'm tired of the fights. No sooner does it stop than it all starts up again. And we slip out the window and down the back stairs, and we find us a safe place to hide. Take my hand, Charlie, try not to be scared. Put your coat on, it's cold outside. Cold outside.
Yeah, that's
it's a little intense.
Yeah, it's an intense song. But yeah. You know what? As I was saying again with the writing, it's just like I'm in that house, man. I'm watching the brothers.
Yeah.
And aside from the fact that it's a beautifully written song, I feel like there needs to be more music like this.
Yeah.
Something that's a little more than just a love song, or more than just a, you know, like a happy pop song about whatever. I mean, the dark side of our relationships exists.
Yep.
You know, and so many people are going through exactly what the kids and you yourself have gone through. So it's really, this is an important song.
Yeah, it is. It'll be on the next record. Now that I've got you depressed.
Well, it is, you know, it is dark, but like I said, I mean, we need songs like that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's important to also highlight the darkness so that we can get better as a people group.
Absolutely.
Man. Yeah, and like, when people avoid talking about certain things like that,
right? Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's when you stagnate. You don't get better.
Yeah,
when you don't face the demons. So, man, that it is a heavy song, though.
Yeah, yeah, it is. So, you gotta pick and choose those. And that's the thing too. That's kind of interesting about songwriting, and to your point about how you find these threads and kernels and stuff that define your style, I guess. And one of mine is, to lighten it up a little bit, you know, I do write a lot of songs about loneliness and stuff like that. And I played a house concert about 3 or 4 months ago, and my wife came and she brought a friend of hers who'd never seen me play, and she really enjoyed the evening, my wife's friend, but at the end of the evening, she said, "Does he write anything happy?" So I've been very conscious of that ever since then. I'm like, right. I need to do something a little happier. And that's where the title of the new album comes from, At Home in the Darkness. It's a line from one of the songs, but it really, I think, as I was getting ready to put the record out and I was thinking, you know, what am I going to call it? There is a song on there called These Two Hands, which I was going to call it These Two Hands because I really like that title, because it there's a lot of references, I guess, indirectly to, you know, being a guitar player. Mm-hmm. And then I do a lot of stuff in my spare time, do-it-yourself stuff. You know, sure. I'm a car mechanic and home remodeling and stuff like that. So I work with my hands a lot. And a lot of these characters that I describe are kind of working men. So I thought, yeah, it's a great title for the record. But as I was getting ready to get finished with it, I thought about that line from the song called Someone Like Me. And it's someone like me who's at home in the darkness. And I thought, you know, a lot of these songs are kind of dark. And I am very much at home in that loneliness kind of feel with a lot of my music. So that's where the title of the record came from.
Nice.
So, yeah. Actually, one of my favorite songs that's on the record is Someone Like Me. And it's got an interesting backstory in that nowadays everybody's, you know, this we've lost, I think, the art of communication, human interaction a lot. With phones and tablets and computers, and we're always texting and Absolutely. Emailing and all that. And so that was on my mind as I was working on it. But as a musician, there's a lot of rejection in what we do as musicians. So whether you're trying to get gigs or, you know, maybe it's a night where nobody really wants to listen to you, or, you know, this song doesn't go over, or, you know, you don't get into this contest or whatever. So there's a lot of rejection, and that's just part of the game. And I think the impetus for this was there was somebody that I felt like I wanted to play with, and they were just too busy to work with me. And so it put me in the mind of being somebody who felt like the world had better things to do than, you know, it's like, than to deal with me. And then it was reinforced by the fact that everywhere you look, somebody's looking at a, you know, a little screen. And
right.
So I kind of thought about it from the perspective of someone who feels like the world's got something better to do than to interact with them. And the more I kind of wrote it, really, because one of the song came together real quickly. But it was one of those things where after it was written, I thought, you know, it's got a little bit deeper meaning than I thought. But the one line I have to always explain so people don't take it the wrong way is, next to our bed, my wife has an alarm clock, and it's broken, and it's stuck on, it's like a clock radio alarm, and it's stuck on this fire and brimstone religious station. And so every morning when her alarm goes off, literally it'll be in the middle of some hell and damnation sermon, you know. So for whatever reason, I was laying there early one morning, and I thought about this radio being broken and stuck on this religious station. So the first line of the song sort of refers to that. My radio dial is stuck on the Jesus station. Through the late night static will I hear all the talk about salvation. I ain't worried about my eternal destiny. Someone like Jesus ain't got time for someone like me. Someone like me who's at home in the darkness on an old blacktop highway. Someone like me who's made peace with sleeping alone. Someone like me who's worn out and weary from wondering every day why so many hearts are as hard as polished stone. Well, I write you letters in my scratchy old long hand. They come back unopened, bound in a brown rubber band.
I know you've got places to go and you've got people to see. Someone like you ain't got time for someone like me. Someone like me is at home in the darkness on an old blacktop highway. Someone like me who's made peace with sleeping alone. Someone like me who's worn out and weary, wondering every day why so many hearts are as hard as polished stone. Summer's gone and the nights are getting cold. These days I swear I feel a million years old. And I try to follow the signs along the road. They're all rusted out and full of buckshot holes. And through a dirty windshield from the corner of my eye, well, I see the milestones and the fence posts go flashing by. Act like I don't notice, but it ain't no mystery. Yeah, this world is turning too fast. Someone like me, someone like me is at home in the darkness on an old blacktop highway. Someone like me who's made peace with sleeping alone. Someone like me who's worn out and weary, wondering every day why so many hearts are as hard as polished stone. Why so many hearts are as hard as polished stone.
Yeah, man, that's another one. Like, it's, yeah. There are people like that too.
Yeah.
The line about the station being stuck on the Jesus station.
Yeah.
I came across that while flipping through your Instagram.
Yeah.
Ironically, right?
Yeah.
But when I heard that line, I was like, oh my gosh. I don't know. There was something so captivating about that. About the way that you described that and how it like leads into the rest of the song. And it's just, I know I've been saying it all day today in our conversation, but man, it's really masterful.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about that to me is I don't ever want anybody to take that as some sort of like I'm thumbing my nose at, you know, I'm not making fun of religious people or
right.
So we haven't talked that much about live performance, but it's a kind of an interesting segue into, you know, you have to be sensitive to what you say, because you never know, especially nowadays. So I'm just going to get offended. So I always feel like I need to explain that line, because I don't ever want anyone to think that I'm just flippantly making fun of religious people or whatever. So.
But then at the same time, like I know what you mean about being careful about, you know, what you say in your songs and stuff like that. Yeah. But at the same time, you also need to get your songs out.
No,
man.
You're right.
I mean, because, like we were talking about authenticity,
yeah,
you know, and putting a little bit of yourself in each song,
yeah,
that's important too.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that as a songwriter, sort of a different topic but related, I guess, is you never know how somebody's going to interpret a song, which is you have a vision in your mind of what you were thinking about when you wrote it. And then you play it for someone and they will have a completely different interpretation, which I think is cool. You know, I think that's really interesting. As the writer, it's always interesting when you've got something in mind. I've got a song that is called Sidewalk Romance that takes place in my mind, it takes place in Austin, Texas, you know, and I put some kind of Texas references into it. And I played it for the first time. I've told this story many times before, but I always think it's funny. I played it for a friend of mine who I listened to the interview with Anthony Dante today, and he mentioned Dan Magnolia. And I played it for Dan, and Dan grew up in New York City. And so to me, it's a very sort of a Texas song. And I played it for Dan the first time a few years ago, and he goes, "Man, that song is so New York. You know, it just reminds me of brownstones and, you know, the so."
But you're like,
yeah. And more recently, there was a Facebook group, and they were asking for people to post songs, and I posted this one song, which to me is about a man and a wife. And the lady that had asked for us to post the songs came back and said, "It's very pretty." She said, "Obviously, it's called Katie's song," and she said, "Obviously, Katie is your daughter." So I was thinking about that after she said that, and I thought, you know, the way the song's written, that it could be that. And I was kind of mad at myself because I'm like, you know, it would have been a little bit more compelling song had it been the father talking to his daughter. You know, it's really the husband talking to the
wife, right?
Yeah, but. I thought, you know, it would have been even more sort of emotional if it would have been the daughter, because it's about a guy who's got a substance abuse problem, and he's saying, "Hey, you know, Katie, give me just a little bit longer, and I'll get clean, and I'll make things right again." So Katie could be the daughter, you know. I thought of it as the wife, but it was another interesting point of somebody hearing something and thinking, "Oh, yeah." You know, and then I never once thought of it as being a father and a daughter, but there you go. So,
well, that is the beauty of songwriting. Yeah. That is the beauty of songs. Yeah. I mean, you put it out into the ether and everybody consumes it a different way. They pull different things out of it. They analyze it. And then, you know, as a listener, you are almost compelled to put the song that you're listening to in your own context.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, it really, you know, like the song about the song Charlie you just played. You know, I have a younger brother too.
Yeah.
And then so like I was, you know, that didn't really happen to us, but like I could totally see myself acting in that same way. And then that's where it gets you. Yeah. It's
really and relatable. In that song, Charlie, you know, in real life, it's my older. I was the younger brother. I was Charlie. So, you know, so you just never know, which is why I think it. Strange topic, but that's why I always think I'm sort of not a big fan of music videos unless they are just film set to music, which is fine. But you know, with the advent many years ago of the music video, I felt like that really kind of in some ways ruined.
Video killed the radio star.
Yeah, exactly. Because you'd have this vision in your mind of what the song was supposed to be, and then you know you'd see this
like actors.
And it's like, so I don't know. I've always felt like video was
Man, I resonate with that too. It is such an old school approach that you have. And like in the day, like, you know, this song is kind of about that with the social media. You got to post videos, you got to do this, you got to be, you know, on an Instagram story all the time telling everybody what you're doing, especially as a singer-songwriter who's trying to, you know, let's be honest, gain fans.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And, you know, social media is a great tool for reaching thousands of people. But at the same time, man, the nature of songs is, you know, you got to leave it up to the listener to invent something. So the thing about the music video, that's a real novel concept.
Yeah,
to me
well, and to your point, and I'm sure you've probably seen, you know, the Fire Festival documentary. You know, the thing to take away from all that is that there's a songwriter that has a songwriting podcast, and one of the things he says is that the well-constructed Instagram page is not songwriting.
Oh, man. And that is an awesome statement.
I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but it's true. You know, there are people that, I mean, and I have these people that follow me all the time, and out of courtesy, I follow them back. And
you don't have to.
I don't have to. I know.
you don't owe them anything.
So, but, you know, these beautiful pages, but sometimes you take the time to listen to their stuff and it's like, you know, don't quit your day job, you know? So, to your point, I mean, you could have a gorgeous media presence and a beautiful website and a wonderful Instagram, and you could post every day and say, "I'm doing this and I'm doing that." But they're at some point in time, kind of like the whole Fire Festival thing, you know, at some point in time, you have to get down to the reality, you know, and
well, the songs are the crucible.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, everything, all the Instagram and all that stuff.
Yep.
That stuff melts away when you put the heat on.
No,
if you can't play them live.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, and that's why I love doing podcast episodes with musicians and singer-songwriters. When they come in here, it is a one-take deal. I mean, you have to play it. If you can't play it, then you got to be ready.
Yeah,
you can't be afraid of the danger.
That's an interesting topic. And I know you and Anthony talked about it a little bit, but It's very interesting to me, and I hope the folks that are listening. My producer and good friend Dave Mallon, who produced the record there, my latest record, and Dave is just a fantastic multi-instrumentalist. He has a gorgeous state-of-the-art studio, and Dave's background and sensibilities, is a wide range of different types of music that he enjoys and produces and all that, but we're always going back and forth in a respectful kind of a headbutting about how much is enough when it comes to adding instruments and production and stuff like that. And I'm very much into the minimalist approach. And Dave, to his credit, is always saying, you know, if we could add just this and this.
And
my joke with Dave is he's like the bank. You know, if you think you made a mistake and you go to the bank and you say, you know, I think this statement is wrong or whatever, usually the bank is right and you're wrong. And almost always Dave is right and I'm wrong. But it's a fascinating discussion to me. You know, where do you reach that tipping point when... And we were just talking about it the other day because we were working on a new thing. You know, where do you reach that tipping point between the production and the instruments taking over and the song sort of gets lost in?
Right.
So that, you know, the stuff on my new record is, there's some what I would refer to as production numbers, you know, and there's a lot of simpler stuff too. But you've got to be able to go out and play that stuff live. And so...
Yeah, translating even a big production song, it's got to translate to your main format, which is acoustic guitar and vocal.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you can record Bohemian Rhapsody, but if you can't go out and perform it, you know, people are going to be scratching their heads going, well, this is not what I paid for.
Right. It's, you know, let's be honest, it's dishonest.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, to me, the true test of a really good song has always been, can it stand on its own? Can you sit down at a piano or a guitar and play it and have it be just as compelling? And sometimes, you know, some music is just not going to work that way. But for me, and I think for other songwriters, it's always that challenge. One of the guys I used to work with used to call putting hair and makeup on it. You know, how much hair and makeup do you put on it? You know,
how many coats?
Yeah. And for me, it's hard because, you know, you're in this gorgeous studio. You've got a guy like Dave, for instance, who can play, you know, big, you know, grand piano, gorgeous piano parts. He can model any instrument in the world.
Yep.
You can bring in fiddle players and steel guitars and, you know, and I love doing that stuff. But it's always a challenge to take that appetite suppressant when it comes to...
Mm. Well, it's restraint.
Yeah. But I do enjoy that. And reminds me, I wanted to just give credit where credit's due. Dave did a bunch of gorgeous piano stuff on the latest record. There were some other folks that did some really, really wonderful work who I want to mention, one of whom is a singer-songwriter named Nicole Bolanus. And Nicole sang harmonies on a Fado Do and a song called How It Feels. And then there's a Maryland-based singer-songwriter named Kippen Martin, who was just crazy, off-the-charts talented. And a wonderful person to boot. And I was able to lure Kippen into the studio. And we've since become friends and have done some performing together. But Kippen sings, adds her lovely voice to a couple of songs on the record, too. So I always, like I said earlier, I don't really consider myself that much of a singer. And so to me, it's always fun to work with people that are, their voice is an instrument.
You know?
And they can make it do whatever they want. I'm just so jealous of the ability to be able to do that. And somebody like Kippen is classically trained, so it's interesting to see her work with Dave, because Dave understands all the music theory and stuff. And so I'm not being falsely modest, I literally step out of the way when they start working on harmonies, because they start talking a language that I don't speak. You know, it's like Dave's like, well, if you go to the fifth, then it'll be the perfect, you know, suspended 11th chord. And Kippen's like, oh, yeah, I got it. Yeah, boom, boom. And it's just like, you know, it's like watching surgeons work or somebody that's really...
And you're in the observation.
Yeah. And I'm just
well, like we were saying, man, lean into your strengths, right?
Yeah, that's
your strength
what you
is,
do.
Again, I'm going to say it again. It's the songwriting is just so, it is really masterful, man. It's a pleasure to hear your songs.
Well, you know, the songwriting is good. And I think one of the other things I try to do, And it goes back to what we started talking about originally. Because I do consider myself to be a guitarist more than anything else. And I do get to scratch that itch occasionally, which is fun. Mm. I get to go out with, for instance, I mentioned Kippen, going out to do a thing with her where I just am the guitar sideman. And I'm a pretty good lead guitar player. But I don't get to do that very often. There's a little bit of it here and there on the record, but sometimes I'll get to do that. Most people don't take me up on it because most other songwriters, I think they think that it's beneath me or something because I've got my own songs and my own career and stuff. But I'm always going, hey, let me come out and just play guitar for you. Right. I mean, I get a big kick out of that. I don't need to be the star.
Are you just playing acoustic for?
Yeah, yeah, I can, and I do some electric stuff as well occasionally. But
hey, everybody, pay attention.
Yeah. So Kippen was kind enough. She's let me do it for. And when I do things in the round, as the songwriters call it, you know, I will play lead or whatever to their tunes, you know, where it's appropriate. So that's a lot of fun. But the point I was going to make was I do use a fair amount, as you can tell, of kind of obscure chord voicings.
Yeah.
So I've noticed that's sort of become my thing, too.
It's your signature.
And it's good and it's bad because I joke with Dave all the time. Like, next time I'm going to write something that's freaking, you know, C to F to G. And because it's difficult, you know, it's technically difficult to do that stuff in the studio, especially where you have to do it time and time again.
Yeah.
But I've sort of given in to the fact that that's sort of becoming something that's a signature of mine. So, and to that point, this is a new song. I thought it might be fun to play. Getting back to what we were talking about with story songs. I read a book that was recommended to me by a fellow songwriter a couple months ago about the Wright brothers and the first, you know, how they changed history with the airplane. And there's not a lot of days or times or moments in time that really truly do. You know, it's kind of an overused phrase, such and such changed history. But it really did. If you think about the day that they made the first powered flight, I mean, what that led to is a complete change of so many things. And so I thought it was a very interesting story, and I thought it would be might be fun to write about it. And again, as I mentioned before, always interests me kind of the regular guy aspect of life. And what was interesting about the Wright brothers, even though they changed history, was that they were not educated. I didn't know this till I read the book. They were not educated. They weren't engineers. They weren't.
Yeah, they were like, they worked at a bicycle
shop. Yeah, they had a bicycle shop. Yeah. They were just guys that had this dream, and they figured out all this stuff and they built it, you know, with their two hands.
Yeah.
So initially I thought, well, the story's cool. And then I thought that angle was neat. And then another thing that I learned, as you might expect, is that everybody said, hey, you're nuts. You're crazy. You know, men were meant to fly. They'd have wings type thing. So there's an underlying theme there too of having a dream and not putting it aside because the world tells you that it's impossible. So there were two or three different cool angles to this. And so I wrote this song, and we recorded it the other day. Kippen's going to come in and sing on it. I think it turned out kind of neat. It's called Between Heaven and the Ground. And I'll just preface it by saying a little bit of background real quick. Where they made their first powered flight was you know, Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, but it was a spit of land that was in between two bodies of water, and on one side was the Atlantic, and on the other side was a thing called the Albemarle Sound. So there's a reference to the Albemarle Sound in it. Well, 8 days before Christmas, 19 and odd three, on the coast of Carolina, my brother and me. We stood atop the sand hills by the Albemarle Sound, with a mind to sail across the open sky,
between heaven and the ground. Well, we hail from Ohio, working men of modest means. Folks said that we were crazy for fooling with flying machines. They said, remember poor old Icarus, how he came crashing down. God would have given men wings if they belonged between heaven and the ground. But when I close my eyes at night, the vision is the same. I see a sleek machine take flight, and I hear the clouds whisper my name. Those that doubt our intentions, they will never understand how it feels to burn with passion and to build a dream with your hands, with your own hands. Your own. December wind was freshening, and on the hill we stood next to our winged invention, made of wire cloth and wood. My brother cranked the engine, my heart began to pound. I climbed aboard and set a course between heaven and the ground. And if I lived a thousand lifetimes, I could not forget that day I rose into the cool morning air and I watched the earth fall away. There among the sand hills, by the Albemarle Sound, two boys from Ohio touched the sky. Between heaven and the ground, yeah, we watched a dream take wings and fly between heaven and.
Yeah, man, that's another one. God, it's so, your writing is so good.
Thank you.
And I got the chills hearing that.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. That was a tough one because it's a long, complicated story. So
yeah.
How do you grab the essential parts of it, you know?
Even again, with the beginning lines, like even the way that you, instead of saying 1908, you say ought,
yeah, yeah,
instead of the zero.
I wanted to kind of give it that feel.
Yeah, instantly you're teleported back to that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, and just, and then the Icarus reference.
Yeah.
Dude, that was so, that's so perfect.
I wasn't sure, you know, if people would get that. Yeah, it's a fairly literate reference, but that's,
man.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Thanks. So this one's going to be on the next album?
Yeah, it will be, yeah. We recorded it the other day. Dave and I did the guitar and the piano, and then we're having and speaking of, always like to plug other local musicians, there's a very, really, really talented violin player named Tiffany Shanta, who I know you're friends with Eli,
yeah.
Lev, who I owe a public apology to Eli. We were supposed to get together. I had to bail on Eli. So Eli, this is my second public apology. I'm sorry. I promise I'll make it happen. So I hate being that guy, but I had to do it. For a family thing. But anyway, Tiffany's going to come in and play some violin, which I think would be a real nice touch, a real nice texture to it. And then Kippen's going to come in and sing some harmony. So again, we'll try to keep it fairly simple. But I think there are some textures there that will make it really nice that will, to your point, will add to that kind of, you want to kind of get that historical feel.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So that's, yeah. That's, so I'm really proud of that one.
It is, man, it is great. Dude, I wish I had more to say except for, you know, wow, that's a great song and I love your writing. But I mean, this is less of an interview and more of like a masterclass in songwriting and me just, you know, listening to great songs. And I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way. This is great.
Well, one thing I will say is if anybody that's listening enjoys the craft of songwriting and you want to, you can always reach out to me. I mean, I'll do it for no charge most of the time. I'm glad to do one-on-one stuff, or I'll put together a seminar or whatever. I love to talk. I love to geek out on the whole, you know, all the aspects of it. So always happy to help. If you're an up-and-coming songwriter and you hear my stuff and you like it, hey, reach out, man. You know, I'm do it all the time for lots of people that, you know, they'll just send me a set of lyrics and I'll send it back saying, hey, here's what I would change or whatever. So, you know, I'm available for that as with many things.
Well, that's crazy that you're doing it for free, man.
Well, I shouldn't, but I do. So
yeah, that's a beautiful thing. Yeah. It really is. Yeah, man, we've been talking for a minute. Is there anything else that you wanted to, any more songs you wanted to share? Or, I mean, we can keep going.
Okay. Hey,
I got whatever you want to do, whatever you want to do.
Well, I just want to, I guess, just plug the new album and say that, you know, if you're looking for a great recording studio, I got to give Dave a plug. Innovation Station, David Mallon in Annandale, Virginia. Going back to, you know, I listened to your interview with Anthony this morning as I was driving around doing some stuff. And so, you know, you guys made some great points about how much talent there is locally.
Oh, yeah. And I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah. There's lots of really, really talented folks. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard here to get out. And that's, I understand that. But, you know, you got to get out and support live music. So, you know, and I know you and Anthony were talking about how there's so much out there that it's hard to
consume everything.
And the one thing I would say is that there's one of the things I've learned with this whole songwriting thing is there's so much talent at different levels. And by different levels, I mean, you know, the music business has changed. And so it's the days of record contracts and all that are pretty much gone. I mean, you know, the internet, for all its wonderful things that it does, has kind of really changed the way the music business works. And I don't know, you can argue about whether that's good or bad. But so there's so much talent out there that, and it's not always big name talent is what I'm trying to say. I've got friends that are personal friends of mine, a good friend of mine, a guy named Wes Collins. I'm getting ready to do a show with him. I had him up here a couple weeks ago. And, you know, Wes's stuff, just for example, is just, it's as good as anything, anywhere, anytime, you know. But and he's not Beyonce or, you know, you know what I mean? He's not at that level of fame, but there's just so many talented people out there. So don't be afraid to give some people a chance, you know. And so there's a lot of that talent locally. There's a lot of that talent regionally. Mm-hmm. And then there's sort of a, not sort of, there is a group of people that are in the same circle that are national, as a matter, actually, that, and a lot of us have met and got to know each other through song contests, which is, there's several big name song contests that a lot of songwriters that are try to get into, and oftentimes there'll be a performing aspect of those song contests too, where if you get selected as a finalist, you have to come and perform. And so I've made this network of songwriting friends nationwide, primarily through song contests. And then you start gig swapping like Wes and I are doing and stuff like that.
Like you open for them and they open for you.
Or, hey, come down and, you know, play in the round with me or whatever. So that's a lot of babbling to say that there's a lot of local artists wherever you are that are, man, if you just get their stuff and give it a chance, you'll be like, holy cow, that's good, you know?
And it is usually people who are pursuing this in parallel with their 9 to 5.
Yeah, you got
it. So you would never, ever guess, you know? I'm fortunate enough to, you know, be able to showcase some of this talent, like yourself, like the people that I've on my show. But like, if you're running across them in the street, you'd never know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You'd never know.
It's full disclosure, I'm a 9-to-5 guy as well. And the people I work with have no clue that
we got to get them out to some of your shows, man.
Some of them I do, you know, but I always joke about my secret identity, you know.
Yeah.
But it goes back to what I was saying before. I mean, it's almost impossible to make a living at this nowadays because it's just not the way it used to be. You know, people don't get discovered and get contracts do tours and all that stuff. You know, a very small handful of people can really make a living at it, but man, it's tough. It's tough because it's all free. You know, if I want to listen to whatever, I just pop on the internet and I can listen to it, you know, so.
It's a labor of love.
Yep.
It's a passion project. And man, I talk a lot. You know, I have a podcast, so I run my mouth a lot. I talk a lot about fights. I talk a lot about, you know, whoever sits across from me, usually you're at an angle, but usually they're here. I can run my mouth about almost anything, but to hear your level of songwriting, it's kind of like stunned me into a stupor. And I love that, man.
Well,
I really
so
do.
Much.
I love your music.
Well, what I love is I love hearing from people that enjoy it. So if you're listening to this and you like what you hear, it would mean the world to me to have you just reach out and say, hey, I like your stuff. So,
yeah, man.
So why don't I leave you with one of my favorites. This is a song I wrote for my mom who passed in 2005. And you always want to, as a songwriter, certainly write something worthy of somebody's memory when they were close to you. And it's tough to do without it being sappy and sentimental. But I went back and visited our old house after she passed away. And it gave me the impetus for writing this particular song. It's called Darkness Falls. Day surrenders to the shadows, night wraps me in its indigo embrace. Spirits of your love and laughter haunt the crumbling walls of this old place. I hear your gentle whisper in the plaster and the wood. Dusty shelves and empty rooms remind me that you're gone for good. So I lay me down to sleep with ghosts and memories as darkness falls. You reached into a crowded heart and you gave me all the love that you could find. And your arms were always open, even with the world of worry on your mind. I was just a boy back then, nowhere near a man. Burdens of a mother on her own, I did not understand. But the sadness in your smile makes sense to me now, as darkness falls. Thunder shakes a rusty roof of tin. A weathered clapboard trembles in the wind. Rivers rise and red dirt turns to mud. And more I fear I'll be taken by the flood. When darkness falls. Well, I try to find the rhythm in the days, but nothing's been the same. Since we stood out in the prairie wind and we prayed beside a stone that bears your name. With Hail Mary full of grace, well, we said our last goodbyes and we laid you down to rest beneath the Oklahoma sky. Now the star that used to guide my way is gone as darkness falls. You said God's eyes stay open every day, but I know he must have closed them tight when he took you away. Rivers rise and red dirt turns to mud.
More and more I fear I'll be taken by the flood as darkness falls.
Yeah, man, that's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
How do you sing that song and just not just break out in tears? I mean,
well, as honest as I could be, I could give you a really phony answer, but the honest truth is, it's fairly technical. There's a lot of interesting chord voicings going on.
I'm hearing it.
So I really have to concentrate on
playing.
There's a lot of stuff going on with my hands there. So I'm always thinking about her, and there's always sort of a little tear in the corner of my eye. And I have two or three songs, as you might expect, that are, and I don't mean this cynically at all, but that are sort of guaranteed tearjerkers.
Right.
That's one of them. I can normally tell that it gets to people. And so I honestly, with that one, I have to concentrate on the playing aspect of it.
Right.
I think maybe that's the way I do it. So.
Yeah.
And repetition, you know, you do. So.
But going back to the song, it's, again, beautifully written. And I guess I got to call my mom after this, man.
That's right.
No, really, it
tell is. Tell her that you love her.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Just focusing on something so heavy like that, man, at least from where I'm sitting, it's a great tribute, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That means a lot. Well, I appreciate you having me and spending the time talking to me.
Yeah,
today.
Man. I had a whole thing like I was going to say, and, you know, that's just out the window. I gotta refocus. You know, I'm the host. Come on.
That's right. You're a professional.
Yeah, man. Just from me, it has been an absolute honor and an absolute pleasure to hear your music, and just to hear songwriting that is so it's on another level right here coming from you. And I really appreciate that. Thank you for your service and thank you for your music. I mean, it's incredible. Everybody that's listening to this, I'm sure now is really.
Well, I hope they'll reach out. I'm at mikepryanmusic.com. Dan will kill me if I don't mention my website.
Yeah.
Beautiful new website, by the way. We were talking about websites earlier. I changed website companies about 3 or 4 months ago, and I'm really proud of the way it looks. So it's mikepryan, use the P, mikepryanmusic.com.
And then on Instagram?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, mikepryanmusic, Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. So you can find me, and you can always go to my website, and there's a contact thing there, so you can reach out to me directly there if you anything you want to say to me directly, or if you want to talk songwriting or whatever. So
yeah, man, I'm gonna send some people your way.
I like it,
man. I think what you're doing by helping local songwriters elevate their craft, and you know what, it might not be right, like, I mean, but just the fact that you are willing to help people out and just elevate the quality of writing in this area, I think is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Once again, thank you so much for coming. Mike P. Ryan, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, brother.
And there you have it. The 26th episode of the Lucha Lounge podcast is in the books. I had an incredible time talking with Mike, and I am so grateful I was able to experience his music firsthand. If you'd like to see what he's up to, you can follow him on Instagram at Mike P. Ryan Music, or check out his website, mikepryanmusic.com. Well, I guess that's it from me. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. Bye.